Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampras from Australia. Coming up later on the show, we'll be answering your questions. But we haven't got a five-question section this week because I think technology hates us, David. What yeah. really happened?
Well, as you know, Kevin, I'd lined up an interview, a five-questions interview with Ian Pont, the fast bowling guru, which was going to be very good. We recorded that a few days ago. And Ian, as usual, spoke very well. If you've ever heard any of Ian's interviews, you know how well he speaks. Ian spoke very well on that interview. Good. Yeah, brilliant. We record it using the Skype internet telephone system and a special recording piece of software that I've got. But unfortunately, due to a bit of a technical mix-up, it only managed to record my side of the interview and not Ian's. So what you got was me asking some very, very good, very interesting questions and then complete silence.
Yeah.
So Ian has agreed to re-record it very kindly. Ian's very kindly agreed to re-record it. So we're going to be doing that, and that will be on next week's show, as long as there are no more technical issues. So a bit of a fail for me this week, and also a bit of a fail on the cricket front as well, because I didn't manage to play on the weekend because the conditions finally turned against us. We've had a good start to the season, but the rain was just
that's the same.
Yeah, the rain was just too bad this week. It rained Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then it rained Saturday morning. Then the sun came out Saturday afternoon. We start about 2 o'clock. Sun came out Saturday afternoon, and we thought maybe there's a chance. Then there was one more shower, and that was that. Game called off, and then of course you know what happens. As soon as the game gets called off, the whole rest of the day was beautiful sunshine.
Yeah, I hate that
as well.
But did you get any other cricket in throughout that week, David?
Well, luckily I did. We had a bit of a practice game in the week against a local sort of pub level team that, you know, very poor standard side. Unfortunately for them, we absolutely hammered them. In fact, we ended up giving them runs by not appealing for LBWs in the end. So that was a bit but it was good to have a practice game, because often with practice it can be a bit disconnected from what goes on in the middle. So we enjoyed having the practice game. We played a 20-over match. We bowled them out for 59, and then we knocked them off fairly easily.
Did you get to roll your arm over and have a bowl,
no,
David?
No, I still have the record. And I've told you this before. Have I told you this before? I've never bowled in a game.
No, I don't think so.
I've never bowled in a game, because I've always kept wicket. I've never bowled in a match. I mean, I've bowled in the nets, and I've bowled in practice, middle practices and things like that. But this was an actual game. It was a practice game. It was an actual game. And I've still never bowled in any game. Although I took two catches standing back. What have you been up to then? You've been practicing, have you?
Yeah, recently I went to the nets with a couple of mates.
Yeah.
I've been working on something throughout the week where I was trying to increase my backlift a bit.
Yeah.
It wasn't just by watching the international cricketers, but I figured that I wasn't getting enough power into my shots with my little mini backlift, and I thought if I increase my backlift a bit, it'll get more power into my shots. So I tried that in the nets, but it worked on normal half volley or leg side or straight deliveries, but anything outside off, I really struggled. I don't know why. I think I just sort of threw my bat at the ball most times, didn't really get my head or anything in position, but what would you say to that?
Yeah, it's a tricky one without seeing your bat, but usually what happens is if you see a batsman who's quite good with straight deliveries, but they struggle when the ball is going wide outside off stump, and they're a good judge, i.e. they know it's wide outside off stump, so they don't think it's a straight ball. They know it's a wide half volley and they're going for it. Then usually what's happened is that they've got their top half and their bottom half mixed up a bit. So the foot goes in position for, say, a cover drive. So you imagine your sort of toe is pointing towards cover, extra cover, that kind of area.
Yeah.
so your hips go round. But the shot, because you've been told, you know, from coaching to play straight, instead of the shoulders going round to match the hips, so you imagine the shoulders then start pointing towards extra cover as well, then the shoulders stay as they are and the hands go out, because you're thinking I've got to stay sideways on, because that's, you know, what I should do to play straight. You've got to stay sideways on.
Yeah.
So the hands go out, the elbow then, the leading elbow then is drops because the hands have gone out, and you sort of have a bit of a swing at the ball and end up edging it. So if the shoulders go round with the hips and you keep the front elbow high, then you've got you increase your chance. You increase what in modern coaching terms we call a hitting zone, i.e. the amount of time that the swing of the bat matches the direction of the ball. You increase the hitting zone, and when you increase the hitting zone, you increase your likelihood of hitting the ball in the middle of the bat.
All right.
The key to all that is, if your elbow starts to drop when you play the shot, you're playing with the bat away from your body. Now that's okay if you're Kevin Peterson, he can get away with it. He's got a good enough eye to get away with it. But if you're Kevin Sampath, you probably can't get away with it. Or if you don't potentially, if you definitely can't get away with it. So, yeah, just tighten up a bit. That's the quick way of saying, you know, tighten up a bit is the quick way of saying keep your elbow in control of the shot and get your shoulders around so you're a bit more compact in the technique.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I should practice a lot more because I've got my sister throwing me down a few as well. Oh, by the way, I'm training up my sister for the women's cricket summer seasons because I want to. She's shown liking to cricket, so.
Oh, excellent! How old is she?
She is 14.
Oh, brilliant! Okay,
just perfect. sort of the right age.
Yeah, definitely get her into that. Yeah.
I've been playing cricket with her since I was little because I don't have a brother, so she's been like sort of like a brother to me. But yeah.
Yeah,
definitely
so
trying to get into that.
So she's had plenty of toughening up as you steamed in and bowl bounces at her just to practice that.
Yeah, well, they haven't. She's not too scared of them now, but hopefully she'll be tough enough to play in the Australian League.
Well, there's a magazine here in the UK called Spin, which has done a mini feature on women's cricket because the first woman's Wisden Cricketer of the Year, Charlotte Edwards, she has said that it would be a good idea to try and integrate men's and women's cricket a lot more, because she reckons that some of the top England players, if they were given time and were allowed to play with men, they could eventually play county cricket. Certainly, she says the top England players right now, if they'd have played with men, you know, if they'd have gone into men's academies when they were like 16, 15, 16, 17, then she reckons they'd be playing county second 11 cricket now. So because
that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a fair point because, okay, you're not going to get fast women who can bowl as fast as men. That's fair enough. Yeah. But women are now powerful enough to hit the ball for six when they're batting. And spinners don't need a massive amount of power, and wicketkeepers don't need a massive amount of power. So why not? You know, what's stopping us really? I mean, there's no physiological reason why women are going to be, on average, they're not going to be as strong as men. But that, you know, there's plenty of sort of weak, well, not weak, but you know, men who weren't big and strong who played cricket to a very high level. And they did it with timing and, you know, agility and you know, grace and all the rest of those things. So why not? I reckon I think that's really good. So they're talking about allowing women to play in Premier League cricket, which is the top amateur level. I think it's women's teams playing in men's leagues. I think that's what it is. So that's an interesting development. Yeah. So. Things are definitely moving forward for the women's game, so it's a good time for your sister to get into it, definitely.
Yeah, that's right. And even when I was talking to the Australian keeper during the World Cup, she was saying that all the women cricketers need is a bit more exposure and a bit more... They need a little more opportunity when they were young to really improve, because at the moment they're all working second jobs, they don't have enough time, and they've started late as well, so...
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so instead of Ian Pond's five question section today, we're going to have a look at some of the feedback you guys have left on our previous cricket shows and other articles. Have you had a look at that, David?
Yeah, there's been some interesting comments left on the website, which, as you know, is pitchvision.com. If you haven't checked that out and you don't know about the comment sections, then every podcast that we do, every cricket show that we do, there's a section there for you to add your own comments. And you can also email your own comments in as well if you like. But if you want your comment to be seen by everybody, then you can put it into the comment section of the show. So have a look at that if you haven't already. A little while back, we talked about captaincy, what to do if you're a new captain. You remember that one where we talked about how to deal with players with who have specific roles in the team and all that side of things?
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't
Yeah,
it?
well, we got a question from, not a question, a comment from Alexander on that, and he was saying, does the idea that having a blocker in the team, does that match up to one day cricket? Because obviously, you're a bit more limited in your time than you are in the longer format of the game. He was
Yep.
talking about 45 overs, which is a relatively long one day game.
Yeah.
And I agree with him I went into the comments as well. I said, you can have a blocker in the team who plays in the longer format of the game, because 45 overs is long enough where if you get someone who's not out at the end, they're not out 80 or 90 at the end,
Yeah.
that's a job well done in my view, because they've set up a play. Or even if they score 50 in the quite slowly at the beginning, and then someone else comes in and smashes it around at the end, it's a bit of an
Yeah.
old-fashioned view, but setting a platform is quite an important thing in limited overs cricket. I mean, it's gone out of the game a little bit because what you see in modern cricket is you get the power plays. In international cricket anyway, you get the power plays where you don't necessarily get power plays in a 45 over school match, for example. It's just limited over and there's
Yeah.
no fielding restrictions particularly. So the power plays come into it. Obviously, then you don't want blockers in the power plays. You want people who could smash it around and take advantage of the power plays.
Yeah.
And that is especially true in the outside of the UK, where you don't get those early conditions which are conducive to bowling. The ball doesn't swing around as much, and it doesn't nibble off the seam as much, and the conditions are a bit more favourable to batting on average, I'd say, in the
Yeah.
rest of the world than they are compared to the UK. So you've got all those things against it. But yeah, you can still have, especially in club cricket, if you've got someone who's 80 not out at the end, and around that, people have scored quick runs. Then you could have set a decent total, a decent club level total on a club pitch there. So that was Alexander's comment.
Yeah.
We got a bit of controversy as well. The interview with Lee Peel that I did a couple of shows ago, which was all about fat loss and how to get lean for cricket. Peter posted a comment on that article that was linked to that show. And he said, this is the wrong approach. The focus should be on strength, speed, agility, and work capacity, and not getting lean. Because cricketers aren't figure athletes. And I think that maybe that might have been my mistake there, because I agree with him there. Cricketers aren't figure athletes. But as I wrote in the comments, people want to lose weight for various reasons, and some of those reasons will be cricket-related reasons, and some of those reasons will just be, they want to look a little bit better and they want to feel a little bit better and they want to be a little bit healthier. And losing weight is a good way to be able to do that. So, I wasn't suggesting for a moment that we should all be, getting down to bodybuilder levels of body fat as if we're about to enter, Mr. Olympia or something like that. What do you think of that, Kev? Where do you stand on getting lean? What's your view on it?
I think it's really important because, as I believe, you can't be mobile and athletic without being lean. But there are a few non-lean players in the international cricket world out there, like Inzamam Ul-Haq and a few others, but they aren't known for their great fielding skills or their diving abilities or whatever. Like, they're great batsmen or okay bowlers, but to be a good cricketer, you have to be an all-round athlete. And I think that being lean is just one of the steps to become an all-round athlete. And if you want to start improving your skills in the field or skills in running between the wickets or whatever, getting lean should be the first point, because then you take off that excess baggage, so to say.
Yeah. And when I say getting lean, what does that mean to you? Does that mean to you, because I think it meant to Peter, I don't want to put words in his mouth or in his on his keyboard, but I think what it meant to Peter was that getting lean means getting down to very, very low levels of body fat. Is that the implication to you, or do you more think of it as just losing a bit of weight, or how do you think of that term?
I don't see getting lean as sort of being ripped, full of muscle, looking like the bodybuilder you were talking about, but getting lean as into be lean enough to be mobile in the field. If you look at cricketers such as Zahir Khan, a few years ago he was kicked out for being fat, just like Samir Patel at the moment, but he wasn't, and he still isn't the ripped bodybuilder guy you were talking about, but he doesn't look built or whatever, but he's mobile enough to be, he's been losing weight and he's been mobile because he's been losing that weight, if you know what I mean. He's been working hard to sort of drop his body fat percent, not to the lowest level, to say 10% or whatever, but low enough that he can run and bowl long spells and long sessions. Yeah. So it's just about being comfortable in your body to do the things you need to do.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And you were talking about Inzamam, and you can cite other examples of players who sort of bucked the trend of fitness. You know, someone like Ian Botham, who was quite overweight at the end of his career, but still playing for England and things like that. You can talk about those things.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about this the other day. If you imagine a graph, and the graph is on one side you have fitness. So going up is fitness level, and going along is skill level. I reckon that most people on that graph, most, say, professional cricketers on that graph would be high on the fitness level and high on the skill level. So you'd see most people in the high skill, high fitness corner of it, if you like.
Yeah.
And the lower you go, the less you see professional cricketers. So you can have someone like Inzamam who's low on the fitness level but high on the skill level, but there would be hardly anyone alongside him in that graph. Most people would be much higher up on the graph. So if you want to play the percentages, say you're thinking about becoming a professional cricketer, it's your burning desire to play professional cricket, then you want to give yourself every chance, don't you? So what's the example you follow? Do you follow the example of Inzamam or Haq and hope that your skill level will carry you through? Yeah. Or do you follow the example of most professional cricketers, which is to have good skill levels and have good fitness levels? And I would say, well, if you want to play the percentages, then you go for both, don't you? It's not either or, it's both.
Out here, the selectors in club cricket and grade cricket, I've heard that when they select players to represent the state or whatever, they don't only look at skill and statistics, they look at the fitness level as well. So if they see a really fit player with good enough statistics and good enough skill, they'd pick him based on his fitness. So I think that's a big part of cricket nowadays, so it shouldn't be ignored.
Absolutely. And that brings us on to one more comment that we got, which was on my piece about Samit Patel, which you can view on pitchvision.com, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. The final point is, we were talking about Samit Patel in the comment section there. We were talking about fitness testing, and a question was asked of how do you define fitness and how do you assess it? And what I said was, well, fitness is a number of different things. It's not just whether someone's overweight or not. But you should assess it because you can assess it. Unlike form, say, for example, you cannot assess form. You can have a guess at form by seeing how many runs a batsman scored. If a batsman scored 100 runs in his last three innings, then you could say, he's in good form. But then he could get naught in his next innings. There's no way to know. But a fitness test is a fitness test. You know, if you can bench press a certain amount, then you can bench press a certain amount. And okay, it's not, it doesn't directly apply to anything you do on the, just because you can lie down on a bench and push a heavy weight up above your head, that doesn't mean you're going to be a better cricketer. But directly, but indirectly, it's going to help, because strength is part of cricket. So this chap was commenting saying there shouldn't be any fitness testing at all, because the data corrupts the assessment of a player. And I didn't agree with that. I put that in the comments as well. I said you can't ignore fitness testing.
Yep.
A, it's an objective measure, which it's very hard to get in cricket. And B, we'll always have fitness testing, because the ultimate fitness test is whether they can get on the park or not. If someone pulls a hamstring, if you pulled your hamstring, you're not going to be playing cricket on Saturday. And that's a fitness test. In a way, that's a fitness test, isn't it? So we're always going to have some level of fitness test.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that was my thoughts on that, and that was the comments we were getting. And I do invite people to join in with the conversation, whatever level they want to. There's an email that you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com with your opinions, or you can go to any of the shows on pitchvision.com, any of the articles that go with the shows, and just leave a comment there if you've got any strong opinions. And please do. We're always looking for feedback. We're always looking for questions, because we don't really know what to talk about unless we know what you're talking about.
Let's move on to the question section for today, David.
Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome to the question section of the My Cricket Coach Show. Our first question is from John, and he asks, do you have a view advised on the perfect length that a conventional finger spinner should bowl? I seem to suddenly be bowling half volleys. I'm a player in my 30s and I've been pretty successful at the standard I play, but I seem to be finding it difficult to settle into early overs and conceding four or more runs an over too frequently, and I'm not bowling full tosses nor short. It's just well up to the bat, but getting easily put away. John. David, have you been facing off-spin or leg-spin recently? Because I know it gives me nightmares, and I remember last year the perfect off-spinning delivery got me out on a hat-trick ball as well.
No, through the gate.
I see the perfect off-spinning or leg-spinning ball just hitting the top of off-stump or the top of middle stump. What's your views, David?
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of finger spin, it's pretty much the same for wrist spin as well. Any kind of spin, really. Yep. I do keep to it a lot. We've got a couple of good spinners in our club, and I do keep to it quite a lot. So, you know, I do know what is a good length, and it's a really good question. It's a really good question, because I don't think there is a set answer. I mean, as you say, Kevin, the common thing that people say, and it's a very sensible thing to say, is you bowl a delivery that hits somewhere around the top of off stump, because that's the ideal dismissal for either a left conventional left arm spinner or a conventional off spinner, hitting the top of off stump, or perhaps hitting middle stump if the ball's turning a lot in to the batsman. So you want to do that. The key to that, though, really is that you want to get the batsman playing forward doing that, because if the batsman plays back, then he has extra time to defend or play a back foot drive or even cut or pull the ball. Then you drastically reduce your chances of getting someone out. So yes, you want to be hitting the top of off stump, but if hitting the top of off stump requires you to bowl so short that the batsman can play back, then you're wasting your time. So you do want to be getting the batsman to play forward. And Jeff Boycott talks about a spinner who he talked to once, and I can't remember who it was, unfortunately, but it was a very good spinner who he was talking about, a very fine spinner from many years ago. And he says that the best length to bowl is short enough that the batsman has to play forward. If that makes sense. So if he's playing, if it's too full and he plays forward, he can drive a half volley. So you don't want him doing that. But also you don't want him playing back because he's got that much extra time. So you want him reaching for the ball. You want him to be playing forward. So you want the ball to be as far back as possible, but the batsman is still having to play forward to play the shot, to play the defensive shot. And that, depending on the pitch, you know, maybe that sometimes will be going over the top of off stump, or maybe it will be only hitting, you know, a third of the way up the off stump if it's a slow and low pitch. Yeah. So you've got to take that into account as well. But there are limitations even to that approach, I think. So you've got to take in, and you've got to make these assessments as you go along as a spinner. You can't have a set way. There are limits to that approach as well. If you constantly bowl exactly the same spot all the time, then it's very easy for a batsman to get into a rhythm against you. He knows roughly where the ball's going to pitch, so he can come up with tactics to defeat that your particular approach. So you need to build in some variations into that as well. I mean, it could be flight. It could be the amount of turn you're putting on the ball, and you might be putting the ball in the same place. Someone who's a master of that is Daniel Vettori. He'll put the ball in roughly the same place every ball of the over, but every single ball will be slightly different. Bit more tweak, a bit less tweak, a bit more flight, a bit less flight, a bit quicker. Every one of the six balls is different, but they're all landing in a tiny little spot, probably the size of a CD on the pitch. So, So there are limitations to just putting the ball on the spot all the time. So there are things you can do to vary that. You can bowl, for example, in sets. So Shane Warne talks about that. He talks about maybe putting one ball outside leg stump, then the next ball on leg stump, the next ball on middle stump, next ball on off stump, and the last ball wide outside off and pitched up. And the batsman has a big old swing at it and gets an edge to the slip. But he wouldn't, if you'd have put all six outside the off stump, he would have just left them all, because to a right-handed batsman, of course, the wrist spinner is turning the ball away from him. It's a safe ball to leave. So you might just leave all six. Yeah. But he's dragged you across by starting outside leg and gradually dragged you across and made you think that he's bowled a bad ball, when in fact that was the idea in the first place. And the other thing about that idea of bowling far enough back but the batsman has to play forward is sometimes it can be just a fraction too short. So the batsman plays forward. This especially happens on turning pitches. The batsman plays forward, and he either hits him on the pad because it's an off break, or it beats the outside edge because it's a orthodox slow left arm bowler.
Yeah.
And you do that three or four times in the over, you think, oh, I've bowled a good over there. But in fact, the batsman's never been in any trouble. It's turned too much. The batsman's never been in any trouble, and you're never going to get a wicket that way. It's stalemate. You bowled a maiden. Yeah. You've beaten the bat three or four times. You think, brilliant. And maybe that is brilliant if you're playing, say, in a limited over format. But if you're trying to get the batsman out, then maybe you have to pitch it up a little bit more on a turning pitch than you would on a pitch that isn't turning. So you've got to take all these things into account and come up with a length there and then. And there isn't a standard length. Of course, the final thing, of course, is the reach of the batsman. How far can the batsman reach? Obviously, it's going to be a bit further back for a very tall batsman compared to a very short batsman.
Yeah, okay.
But as a wicketkeeper, it's beautiful to watch a spinner work out a batsman. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah, they do say that spin bowling is 90% mind game, don't they? Oh, especially Shane Warne when he worked his magic.
It's a fine art. It's a combination of tactics, mind games, skill, double bluff, a little bit of everything. Yes, I mean, Shane Warne, the master, of course. But yeah, a great thing to. Yeah. I love keeping to spin bowling because of that. Because you really have to think about it, and you really have to winkle a batsman out.
Well, from a spin bowler to a fast bowler,
Amin
Javed asks, I just had a query. Every time I start going to the gym, it starts to affect the bounce in my bowling. I almost lose bounce and movement and become less effective as a bowler. Does this mean going to the gym affects the fast bowler's performance? Are there any remedial exercises or stretches to keep my bowling consistent, even if I go to the gym? Now, David, looking at this, is this a flexibility question? Does this relate to flexibility? Because he seems to go to the gym and get stronger, but he's losing bounce.
Well, it may be a flexibility question. But let's before we look into that, let's actually answer his question. Is it can the gym affect your ability to get bounce? I don't think so. I'm very sceptical about that, because it should improve. If anything, it's going to improve your bounce. Going to the gym prevents injury and increases performance. shorthand. So if you go to the gym and find that your bounce is reduced, then let's think this through a little bit. Or a bounce is generated by the height that the ball is released from, how hard the pitch is, and how fast the ball is travelling when it hits the pitch. So if you're going to the gym, you're going to be hitting the pitch harder, and it's not going to affect your release position, or it shouldn't do, at least. So I can't think of any reason why going to the gym would affect his bounce in any way. However, I mean, going to the gym can cause problems if you don't do it properly. If you do training which gives you a low crossover to the cricket pitch, bodybuilding type training, for example, you know, high volume training where you end up very sore the next day, and you might not be able to be as flexible. So we're going back to flexibility there. You're not as flexible because you're sore from very heavy volume training, for example. Or you're training certain muscles more than other muscles. You're not properly balanced, not balancing out your strength across all the muscle groups and all the movements that you can do. For example, if you're bench pressing, but you're not doing any pulling type exercises, you're not doing any rows or chin-ups or anything like that, that could possibly cause a problem. Also, if you go to the gym at the expense of playing cricket, you know, if someone had the opportunity to train cricket training skills, cricket skills, 3 times a week and go to the gym once a week, I'd prefer that than someone who went to the gym 3 or 4 times a week and didn't do any cricket training. They just played on Saturday afternoon. That would be the wrong way around to do it. So it depends how he's doing it in that way. And also, as you say, if you're doing training to only focus on one particular area, that can cause problems as well. So if you forget about your flexibility training, if you forget about your core stability training, and you just focus on strength, or you just focus on going for a jog, if you just focus on going on the treadmill for 45 minutes, then that's not going to help your bowling. I can't think of any way that would help your bowling. I suppose if you were overweight and you wanted to lose some weight, that could help your bowling, going on the treadmill for 45 minutes. But other than that, you know, it's just improving the performance of your slow twitch muscle fibers, which are exactly the muscle fibers you do not use when you're bowling. So you've got to get the balance right. So I would say, to answer his question, no, it shouldn't affect. But obviously there's something going on there, and we'd probably need to examine what type of training he was doing, how often he was doing it, and whether he was having a balanced approach to his training.
Yeah, because if you look at a most recent example, David, Brett Lee, who was off with injury and he came back, he did a lot of gym work and he looks much bigger now and much stronger. And he's still getting the same pace, if more, even faster. And he's getting a lot more bounce as well. So I don't think it should affect, as you said. So you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, exactly. And just on your point about, just a little side issue, really, on your point about looking bigger and stronger.
Yeah.
That can be quite deceptive as well, because you can have someone who trains to look bigger and stronger, but they don't actually get much stronger.
Yeah.
Because there's a difference between strength training and training for size.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the two are related to each other. Obviously, if you get stronger, you're going to get bigger. And also, if you're trying to get bigger, you're going to get stronger.
Mm.
So the two are related. So just because you see someone has suddenly, you know, puffed up their chest, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be any better at bowling or batting.
Yep.
And just the same as if you see someone who's been going to the gym for a year and you hardly see any changes at all.
Yeah.
They haven't suddenly puffed up into a giant, you know, great big muscles and shoulders and all the rest of it. Then they could have got a lot stronger. It's hard to tell because they've made the neural changes and they haven't had seen a great big growth in their muscle size. So if he's just focusing on trying to get bigger, then he's probably focusing on the wrong thing.
Yeah. Okay, our next question is from Anoop, and he asks, my question is, how to maintain consistency in my batting performance? During the season, I got 100 in my first match, 88 in my second match, and suddenly I didn't have a big score in my third match. As I'm reckoning to play first-class cricket next year, I don't want to lose any opportunity. Please advise. Now, David, hearing you speak about batting so much, I really think that if he's had the skill to score 100, it should come down to a mental and it should really come down to a mind issue, shouldn't it? Or is there a skill aspect to it? Have they found him out?
Yeah, I mean, possibly. I mean, the first thing to examine about that question is he's going on for the basis of 3 innings, 2 of which he did well and 1 he didn't. So if I scored for the rest of my career 100, then a naught, and then 100, and then naught, and then 100, and then naught for the rest of my career, so I knew I was going to get 100 every other innings, I'd be delighted with that. I wouldn't call that inconsistent at all, would you?
No, you'd make
No.
the England cricket team.
Exactly. If I could guarantee 100 every other innings, I'd be in the England cricket team, wouldn't I?
Yeah,
I'd make it
that's
into the
right.
world 11, wouldn't I? So I shouldn't worry too. I mean, basing it on the evidence of 3 matches in which 2 of them you've done well is not doesn't say that you're inconsistent. That doesn't say that to me at all. But that said, I mean, let's assume that he is batting inconsistently. Let's forget about the evidence and let's assume that he is batting inconsistently. What do you do if you're batting inconsistently? Well, the whole thing about batting is it's a very chaotic thing. There's a lot of stuff going on there. There's your mind, your skill, the bowler's skill, the conditions. So many different things go into each individual ball which make up an innings that you can't possibly control all of them. You know, Kevin Peterson the other day, he got out first ball to an absolute jaffer. I don't think anyone would have survived that ball. It was such a good ball. You know, that's the way that it happens sometimes. So the only thing you can really do is just focus on the process that you, the things that you control, the process that you can control. And there's a few things you can do on that. And this is pretty much all to do with the mental side of it, but the mental and the physical do link together quite closely. So, in order to focus on the process, what do you do? Well, you set goals based on things that you can control and you can measure. Like, for example, how many times you go to the nets, how many times you go to the gym, and how many times you work on your visualization skills, for example. When you're out in the middle, you just focus on the ball that you're facing. You don't think about the last ball. You don't think about the next ball. You just focus on this one ball, which is quite a difficult thing to do. Someone who's really good at that, who's come to the fore recently, is Ravi Bapara. I read on a on the King Cricket blog, which if you don't read is excellent, and you should read it. It's very funny and very insightful. But I read on the King Cricket blog that one of the strengths of Ravi Bapara is that he. If someone drops a catch, he doesn't care. He doesn't think, "Oh, I was lucky there. Oh, I'm going to get out any minute." He sees that as somebody else's problem. Someone's just dropped a catch there. Well, that's their problem, not mine. I'm just going to carry on with my batting now. So that's the approach to take it in. Don't worry about any mistakes that you make. Just trust your technique. Trust your ability to score 100, and go out and do it. And if you happen to get out, then oh well, never mind. There's always next time. Just deal with it one ball at a time. That will stop you tensing up. That will stop you getting tense and getting worried about the future, and worried about the past, and you can start dealing with the present then. With the present then. The other way, of course, is when you're out in the middle, is don't try anything that would be outside of your normal skill levels. Play the higher percentage shots. Play the shots that you know you can play, and any shots that you can't play. Don't find yourself trying to play a reverse sweep just because there's no one behind square on the offside and you think that's an area for me to score a run. If you've never played a reverse sweep before in your life, or maybe you've done it, you know, once or twice in the nets and that's it, don't start doing it when you're out in the middle. Practice it first and then do it. So play the shots that you know you can play, cut out the shots that you know you can't play particularly well. And also, tightly linked to all this is the Pitch Vision Academy course on mental training. So if you haven't had a look at that, do have a look. See if there's any tips you can get from there, because all of the tips and tricks in that mental training course are designed to help you get through these kind of problems. Consistency, you know, getting into the zone, setting goals, visualization, all that side of things, which are all very practical things. And if you do them, you'll have success with them. But sometimes people don't know where to start because they think, oh, it's all a load of mumbo jumbo and it doesn't work. Well, this course gives you sort of practical things you can do which actually work. So do have a look at that if you haven't.
Our next question from Daniel is a batting question as well. Yep. I've never played fast bowling before, so I was wondering if you could give me any tips on facing them. Also, could you send me some drills to improve facing them if you have any? Is this another person for your academy course on mental training, David, or is there a skill aspect of this as well?
I would say this is a skill thing because he's never faced fast bowling properly. So he hasn't got to the point where it's a mental part yet. He hasn't got that far yet because he hasn't ever faced it. And okay, yeah, he's worried because he's never faced it. But what he wants to do is build up technique first, and then the technique will allow him to have the confidence to play the bowling. So yeah, it's definitely a technique thing first. So he's asked for drills there. Okay. Now, it's a lot easier to see a drill than it is to explain a drill. So if he wants to know any of the drills that I'm going to talk about next, then the best thing you can do is go on to Pitch Vision Academy, have a look at Gary Palmer's courses, sign up to those, and see the drills in action that he can do, and he can get someone to help him do. So what are those drills? I'll give you a good overview of those just so you've got an idea of those. I think playing genuinely, I'm talking about genuinely quick bowling, you know, stuff that is actually scary, where you feel like if you get it wrong, you're going to be hurt because this guy is really steaming in bowling, say a club level bowler, you know, bowling at 85 miles an hour plus. That's pretty nippy for a club level bowler. That's pretty nippy for a county level bowler or a state level bowler. So that you're talking about top speed here, where you're actually in fear, especially on quick pitches. Then the key is to be able to play defensively off the back foot. If you can play defensively off the back foot, then that's 80% of the battle of playing fast bowling. And then you can add on, as long as you can do that, then you can add on back foot drives, you can add on cutting, you can add on flicking the ball, you know, glancing it down to third man and all the rest of it. So defence is where you start. Yeah. How do you start that? Where do you start with that? Well, the first thing you do is you want to get your foot and body position correct, because that's absolutely vital. So I think I've talked about this before. Yeah. You get someone to throw. You can start with a tennis ball if you like, or you can start with a cricket ball if you're feeling confident. You get someone to throw short balls to you, just bouncing them off the surface. You can just do that in the net or on an artificial pitch or something like that. And what you do is you move back and catch the ball instead of so you don't have a bat.
Okay, yeah.
You pad up, get your helmet on, get your gloves on, get your pads on. And then someone throws short balls to you, and you go back and catch it. You go back and catch it. You go back and catch it. You keep working on getting the position right. When you've got the position right, then of your foot and your body, then you put a bat in your hand, and you do the same thing, except instead of catching the ball, you just defend the ball instead. Then when you can do that, then you can move on to somebody, say, standing a bit closer to you, and instead of bouncing the ball, and again, you can do this with a tennis ball or a cricket ball, you can get them to throw the ball to you from the position of roughly where it would pitch. So they stand roughly where the ball would pitch, and they throw the ball up, underarm the ball up towards you, and you defend it, and you have to defend it. Now, when you're doing that, to advance that, what you can do is you can get someone to throw the ball a bit quicker and a bit more towards your head every now and again. So you're getting in the habit of learning how to defend, dodge, defend, dodge, defend, defend. So you get into the habit of doing both. You don't want to be thinking about both. You want to be thinking about defending. And then if you can't defend it, then you just use instinct to get your head out of the way, because instinct will kick in the moment you feel like a cricket ball. So you don't have to think about dodging a ball. As soon as you see the ball come into your face, you're going to instinctively try and dodge it. So all you do with this drill is you think about defending, think about defending, think about defending, think about it. Always come to my head, dodge. And you can start with a tennis ball. Obviously, with these drills, you've got to be fully kitted out with as much equipment you can, especially using a hard ball. And you've got to have someone who's throwing the ball who you trust, you know, who isn't going to, try and knock your block off with it, because this is about building technique rather than trying to knock your block off. Then when you've done that, you can move on to the really quick stuff. And the really quick stuff, the best way to do that is to find someone who's handy with a tennis racket and get them to bowl, quote-unquote, bowl bouncers to you by hitting the tennis ball into the ground as hard as they can with a tennis racket and it going up around, you know, chin music type height, chest, face, shoulder, that kind of height. That's the hardest to play, especially with a tennis ball coming at you. They really come at you at quite a pace, and you have to be on your toes to play those. Do that with a tennis ball, though, because if you get hit by a tennis ball at that pace, it's not going to hurt you, so you're okay. And then you're just building up technique that way.
Yeah. What would you say to the use of a bowling machine with some nets bowling, David? Would that be helpful or a hindrance?
It depends on how good your technique is in the first place. I wouldn't even consider using a bowling machine unless somebody is of a high enough standard to be able to, technically, to be able to manage it. Because if you're talking about cranking the bowling machine up to 90 miles an hour and pinging the ball in short, then that is dangerous. Somebody could get properly hurt if they don't know what they're doing. And in fact, even if they do know what they're doing, you can still get hurt. I mean, there's plenty of examples of players getting hurt, very good players getting hurt if they're not careful. So you have to be extremely careful. But that would probably be the last thing that I would do, is use a bowling machine up at 90 miles an hour. All or, you know, whatever, 85, 80, whatever speed you want to go for. And I'd want someone who is A, very solid defensively, B, is able to drive off the back foot,
C,
is able to play defend their body with the bat, you know, by playing back foot glances, and D is good on the front foot as well, defensively at least, if not playing drives as well. So I definitely have all of those things. And the just quickly mention the mental side of it. If you're talking about really quick bowling, I've been lucky enough never to face super, super quick bowling. But I've been told by people who have that you're never really confident against very quick bowling. Even if you've got 150 not out, you're never properly confident against really quick bowling. So you have to learn to trust your technique and deal with one ball at a time, like we've been talking about here. And there's no substitute for the experience of doing that. So those drills, combined with improved technique, that will see you enough to give you confidence to be able to play the bowling. But you're never going to be 100% cool. You're never going to walk out against a really quick bowler and think, this guy's rubbish. Because if he's really quick, he can hurt you. And if he can hurt you, then you're not going to be confident against him.
All right. Let's have a recap of what we've looked at today.
Mm-hmm.
We've looked at the perfect conventional finger spinner delivery, so where it should land. And David spoke about getting the batsman playing forward and short enough that the batsman has to play forward, so make him reach for the ball. Don't bowl the same ball over and over again, and practice your variations and judge the reach of the batsman as well. We also spoke about going to the gym and fast bowling, and does that affect your performance? If anything, it should improve your balance and improve your performance, whereas non-cricket-based gym work, though, could affect your performance. Working in just one area could affect that as well. So don't work out just to look big, but work out to work. Use cricket-related workouts to improve your performance. The question on inconsistent performances while batting. Well, for Anoop, don't fret because it's only 3 matches. But if you're going to set yourself goals, set goals based on things that you can control and you can measure, such as how many times you go to the nets or how many times you go to the gym. And in the middle, focus on the ball you're facing, not the previous or the next. And don't try anything that would be outside of your normal skill levels. So play your high performance shots. And also there's the Pitch Vision Academy course on mental training. And the last question we spoke about, facing fast bowling. David spoke about being able to play defensively off the back foot, after which you can add back foot drives, cutting and flicking. And also getting your foot and body position in the right place. So get someone to throw short balls to you and you move back and catch the ball or pat it up to get your position right, after which you can try it with the bat. Or you can also get someone to underarm the ball to you from where the ball would pitch to practice defending and dodging on reaction. Or you could also get someone to bowl bounces at you with a tennis racket. But the bowling machine wouldn't be too useful until your defense is solid and you're overall technically solid. And on the mental side, to trust your technique, as there's and there's no substitute for experience. You guys can follow us on iTunes, the Micro Coach on iTunes. I have, so you should be too.
Yeah, and you can see our new logo on iTunes as well. So have a look at that and let us know what you think, our exciting new logo.
Yeah, that's right. And Twitter, everyone's Twittering nowadays, the celebrities, and so is my coach. So you can too, and you can follow us on Twitter, so do that. And if you guys have any questions or feedback, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchcliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.